This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
In the studio with us now is a genuine Olympic champion, and I don't say that lightly. He is a gold medalist from the 2008 Olympics. He's an Order of Australia nonetheless. He is apparently, and we're going to find out right now, also a really, really nice guy. He's
Do not forget, a father as well.
A fur baby.
There we go. Mr. Matthew Mitchum, welcome back to Joy.
Hello. It's nice to be back.
Welcome to the studio. You have had a crazy, crazy day. You're actually puffing as you arrive in the studio.
I have had the most epic day, and I really wanted to be here at 5:30 so I could get, you know, like a full half hour with you guys. It just didn't happen.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. We'll make the best of it now. It's been an amazingly interesting and very public ride for you over the last 6 years or so. How do you put it all into a couple of little paragraphs or a couple of sentences now?
Well, I find it hard to keep it to just a couple of sentences. That's why I wrote a whole book, and that's why I have a whole 1 hour show. So I just have too much to say.
Yeah, I was going to say. So, started out in the diving in 2008. That was something you started pretty much as a kid, like a teenager. That's when you first started.
I was doing trampoline sports from about 11, and then I started diving. I started diving at about 11, and so I was doing it all through my teenage years. I actually retired. I use that word, you know, so loosely, for about a year at 18. Changed cities, completely changed my life upside down, decided that I didn't hate diving as much as I thought I did, or actually I decided that I was in a better environment for me to be diving in Sydney. So I started diving again, and that was about 15 months before the Beijing Games.
Right. Okay. And unlike most sportsmen, it's becoming more and more common in the last probably year and a half, or more noticeable, I guess, or more well-publicised. But you came out publicly before you competed at that elite level, which was very unusual at the time. And it was something that brought you to the attention of everyone in Australia and probably a lot of people around the world.
Yeah, I think my case was unique because and, like, I'm quite fortunate that I happened to be gay before I got famous. So it was much easier to do this public coming out before the Olympics. And, and I did have the option to not do it. You know, it's not like I planned it or anything, but a journalist basically was asking me, you know, all the run-of-the-mill questions, how old I was, where I live, and who I live with. And, like, I just blurted out, oh, yeah, I live with my boyfriend. And, like, she was, her jaw pretty much hit the table because she knew that, like, she'd struck something really, you know, really juicy. But she was she was super respectful because, she let me, you know, actually have permission. Like, she asked for permission to put it into the paper.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to be putting me, you know, throwing me in the shark tank without me being ready. But yeah, so I was lucky that I had gotten to a place where I was comfortable enough with my sexuality to actually come out. And I decided that, that I wanted Australia to know who they were supporting in the Olympics. And basically, I think it was more of a sensible decision because I kind of wanted to save myself an awkward coming out moment after the Olympics if I did happen to do very well.
Yes, which you did enormously well. You were the first Australian gold medalist in diving since 1924.
Yeah.
Gold medalist. You broke the world record as well.
An Olympic record.
An Olympic record.
Is, you know, still standing.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what changed and what didn't after that point?
What changed? My life changed. I, was in the spotlight a lot, which was great because I got to be, you know, quite vocal and be a bit of a representative, I guess, for the gay community and for, I guess, once my story came out, a spokesperson for mental health issues and all that sort of stuff. But that's kind of jumping a bit ahead. What stayed the same or was, I guess it was a bit of a change. I suffered from depression, as a lot of us do, as a teenager from 14 to 18. And that was a really deep, profound period of depression that, you know, that manifested in a couple of suicide attempts. It manifested in self-harm. It manifested in drug and alcohol abuse. Like I was pretty far off the rails, so much so that, you know, when I did decide to try and come back to diving, the CEO of... an up person at a specific national sporting organization,
right,
kind of threatened my current coach, saying, you know, don't take him back. You know, he's too far gone. Mm-hmm. Like, if he ever makes it back on track, you know, we'll call it a miracle. And hallelujah. But changing cities and changing environments had a profound effect on my depression, and, you know, it alleviated, and I was the happiest I'd ever been for a couple of years. But I naively thought that, that was it. You know, you only have one period of depression in your life and then you're kind of cured. But I never actually addressed any of the underlying causes of that depression as a teenager. Because I never reached out. I never told anybody what I was going through. And so little did I know that rather than going away, depression just kind of lays dormant.
Right.
Unless you actually do address those underlying causes. And so all of those self-esteem issues, you know, came back, and I plummeted even harder, like harder than ever. And you know, of course, I still had shame around my depression because, you know,
You're now a big star.
Exactly.
You're very well known.
Olympians are like considered to be, you know, like up here, and you know, I saw it as a sign of weakness, and so, you know, continued to not reach out, and so I tried to fix the problem myself, or really just kind of dull out the pain. And the most powerful thing that I could think of to change the way I felt was crystal meth, and so I became quite heavily addicted to that. Until. I mean, the catalyst for me to change was, like, I kept trying to quit, you know, so I would detox before every competition always, yep, you know, to make sure that I would, you know, I was doing the right thing as far as competition was going. But every time I went away to a competition, I promised myself with every fiber of my being, with every single cell in my body, I promised that I was not going to use again. And I busted every single time, and it was when I realized that there was absolutely no way that I could get out of this by myself. As a last resort, I finally reached out for help, and that was the catalyst for change.
Okay. All right. It's a great story, and you've done a pretty good job of bringing it down to a couple of minutes. It's all detailed in your book.
Totally.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, once again, you're amazing because you are so public in so much of what you do, which I think you take that on because you think it's important that other people take the lessons from it.
Totally. I'm a huge advocate for people sharing their stories, because when you share your story, it gives permission for someone else to share their story. You know, it offers an opportunity for somebody to relate to something that you've been through. And, you know, like, so many times after my shows, I've had the experience where people have come up to me and they shared something with me that they related to in the show that they've not shared before, that they've not had the power to share before, that they've felt that they didn't have the permission to share before. And so it just opens up a dialogue, and it gets that process of sharing underway and makes it easier for people. And the more we share things, the more it breaks down the stigma, and it makes it even easier for other people to share stuff. And I think the reason why I have been so public with all of this stuff is that I had such a wonderful experience when I came out before Beijing, from, you know, the public, from the media, from everyone. Like, I was just really supported, and it was the most positive experience. And so I took that experience when I was teetering on the edge of whether or not I should actually speak about this drug stuff in my book. And And I had faith that the media and that the public would hold me and support me, and they did. Like, it's been a truly wonderful experience, and so I've had nothing but really positive experiences with being as candid as I have been.
Fantastic. Matthew Mitchum's going to stay with us for a little bit longer. We'll bring you up to date with why he's actually in the studio with us today.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And Matthew Mitchum's in the studio with us. Matthew, we're going to roll right forward now. And I have to say that you've demonstrated that you are more than just an elite sportsman.
I'm pretty faced too.
You're definitely
the triple
that.
Threat.
You look pretty good in a pair of Speedos. It's like, you know, there's...
No, no, Chris, a pair of funky trunks.
Oh, funky trunks. Yes, that's right.
Not anymore.
Oh. All right, Speedos.
All right. Non-branded swimwear. But I'm very happy to be branded at any stage. Always looking for branding.
I was actually going to remark that it has been said over the years that for whatever reason, a lot of the sponsorships that come with being an elite sportsman didn't ever eventuate for you. And I remarked that really, you never really win about that.
I did at the beginning a little bit. It took me several months after Beijing to get anything. And I don't know, maybe I guess I had to prove myself more as an athlete. So, you know, there was some stuff that came through in 2009 and 2010. You know, and I kept on improving, and I was number one in the world in 2010. And then I had a kind of a bit of a spate of injuries, and so I, you know, nobody really wants to back the lame horse. Mm. So I understand that the sponsorships, you know, dried up after that.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like, if you look at the Awesome Foursome, I mean, they milked that for, like, 15 years.
Yeah.
Flog that dead horse.
So it is a little bit strange. But in the end, you've taken hold of the reins, and you're trying to manage your own destiny.
Yeah, well, I came to the conclusion that I was... You know, I'm not entitled to get all that free money that the other more professional, more famous sports in Australia, more popular sports get. And that, yeah, I am going to have to make my own money. And so I guess that's what I'm doing in Melbourne right now.
Yeah. Now, when did you know that there was a performer in you? I remember a little video you put out with DJ Dan Murphy a couple of years on YouTube, which sort of showed you and he and you had your ukulele out there for the first time having a little bit of fun. Is it something you've always done in the background? Or
I always loved music. I was in the choir in primary school, like the good little gay boy that I was. But then when that became a bit too uncool, I did try and do all of the sports that they, you know, pick off teams at lunchtime on the Oval. But I was just so rubbish at all of them, like athletics, swimming, cricket, soccer, football. Like, I sucked at all of them. So I was really quite fortunate that I found trampolining and then diving. And then they kind of took over my life for, you know, for the next 15 to more years. And I never really got the chance to have any formal music education, and I stopped singing and my voice broke, and so there was no reason to go back to it until I started getting those injuries. And so in 2010 I was forced to 3 months of bed rest because I had two stress fractures in my spine, and I was just going stir crazy. So I bought a toy ukulele, taught myself how to play it on YouTube, and the rest is history.
Okay, so from there you've sort of, so you how proficient do you describe your ukulele playing these days?
I think it's all right. Like, I've put several videos up on YouTube, and they've gotten, you know, pretty good attention. I think the two that I uploaded from the London Olympic Village in 2012, one of them got 160 or 180,000 views, and the other one got about 120 or something like that. So, yeah, I think they're going okay.
So you're pretty high up in the ukulele video views sort of category.
Well, I'm no Jake Shimbakaburo or Israel Kamakabakab. I can never pronounce those Hawaiian names.
Right.
But yeah, I think I'm doing okay.
Now, how do you describe yourself in terms of your performance repertoire? What are you, a cabaret performer, or are you?
Well, I've dived into the cabaret at the moment. lol, so many puns. but the songs that we use in the show, they're a pretty eclectic range of songs. Like there's jazz, there's a Spice Girls song, which is also kind of jazzy because it's in 6/8 time. There's a Rufus Wainwright song, there's an Alanis Morissette song, there's some 1920s jazz standards. So there's a pretty eclectic mix of songs.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit more about Matthew's brand new show called Twists and Turns, which is on this week. It is part of the Midsummer Festival. The news is coming up at 6 o'clock with Philip Jones, so we'll cross to him, and then Matthew's also going to give us a little hint of what we could hear if we pop along to the show.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
Matthew Mitchum's in the studio with us still. Matthew, you've got a show that starts tomorrow night. It's called Twists and Turns.
That's right.
So it's a combination of your favourite songs, you're performing them.
Not really favourite songs. That would be a little bit self-indulgent. I've chosen songs that help tell the story. It's because it is an adaptation of the book. It's one big long narrative, really. And so we weave the narrative through the songs, and where the songs help tell the story, we weave the story through the songs, or the songs through the story. It's songs that help drive and tell the story.
So do you have any help up on stage? Is it all you?
It's not all me. I've got some great help. I've got Jeremy Brennan as my musical director. He was in Jersey Boys. And my alter ego, my inner voice, my subconscious, is played by Spanky, who is, yes. I see nods of knowing.
So that's your subconscious.
Yes. Yes. A purple-haired, Maori, hairy-chested, unconvincing Mr. Sister is my subconscious.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, you're going to give us a little hint of what we can hear if we go along to one of the shows over this weekend.
Yeah.
What are we going to hear?
Dunno, I haven't decided yet.
Okay.
It's on the spot.
On the spot.
Do you need some thinking music?
let me see if I can just pull something out of my head. I should have been more prepared, shouldn't I?
That's okay.
Why don't I
You
do...
brought the ukulele.
I
that,
did.
That's a pretty big part of it.
Yeah. I will do 5 Foot Two Eyes of Blue, which is... it's in the show. It's part of the story, because when my mum and I were growing up in Camp Hill... I'll tell the story in the show. You have to come to the show to figure out why on earth 5 Foot Two Eyes of Blue is such an important part of my story.
Excellent. Here it is now. This is Matthew Mitchum.
5 foot two, eyes of blue, but oh, what those 5 feet can do. Has anybody seen my girl? Turned up nose, turned down hose, a flapper, yes, I wanted those. Has anybody seen my girl? Now if you run into a 5 foot two covered with fur, diamond rings and all those things, you bet your ass it isn't her. But could she love, could she woo, could she woo? Has anybody seen my girl?
Yes.
And the crowd goes wild.
Very good, very good. Matthew Mitchum, thank you for that one. Amazing. That's a little touch, a little hint of what you get to hear if you go along to Twists and Turns. Before we go, Cam, you had a question,
well,
a couple of
to,
questions
we
for
We just got to ask. What, first up, what would you count as the highlight of your career? Like, I know a lot of people say it has to be the gold medal, but would it be?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
There you go.
Easy answer, yeah. Yeah.
So then we got to ask now. We've looked through and we're thinking, what would the low light be?
Okay.
What would the bottom... would it be Celebrity Splash?
No, you know what the low light was? That it didn't get brought back for a second season. I was devastated. I thought that's a surefire second-year contract.
Nah. Yeah, you were reading the papers every week.
I was really depending on that second-year's check.
Okay.
No, I have no shame about stooping to that level whatsoever.
Fair enough.
So will you be putting your hand up for I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here?
They asked me, but, you know, this show conflicted, so priorities.
Righto.
But yeah, no, they totally asked me.
Season 2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I said to them, I would love to do that. You know, that is just the sort of filth that's right up my alley. I said, keep me up on the shortlist for second year.
Fantastic. Now, Matthew Mitchum's show is called Twists and Turns. It opens tomorrow night at the Art Centre.
But it's sold out.
But
there are two shows on Saturday. Sorry, I'm doing your job for you.
You can go for it. Two shows on Saturday.
There's a matinee and an evening. They're both really in the evening. The matinee's got more seats, so if the later show is sold out by the time you get there, do not fear. The matinee's still got about 100 seats left.
Fantastic. Get along to the artscentremelbourne.com.au website if you want a book. It is part of the Midsummer Festival as well. Matthew Mitchum, it's been a delight to have you in the studio this afternoon. Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
And good luck with the show. I'm sure it's going to be great. It's done all its apprenticeship around the fringe festivals. It's now hit the mainstream. I mean, it's hit.
It's one of the biggest theatres we have.
It's a very prestigious venue. I mean, when the producers, who are the Melbourne Cabaret Festival, when they told me that that we got the Arts Centre, they were just about falling over themselves to tell me. And because I'm so green to this whole industry, I'm like, okay. Like, I'm not from Melbourne, so I don't know. It's just like, okay, cool.
Yeah,
can't miss it. It's the one with the big pink spire above it.
The Eiffel Tower.
And if anyone's doing a new set of swimming trunks that perhaps they need Matthew to endorse, he's available. So, yeah. Matthew Mitchum, once again, thank you for joining us here on Joy.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.